This is the recording of the first chapter of part 4, Poetic Forms. Name of the chapter, the lyric. Traditionally, the lyric is defined as a short personal poem dealing with a single emotion. It is musical in nature. In its older sense, the lyric is also a song intended for music. But today the term has become very confusing and is not easily definable. It has become comprehensive in its scope and includes any poem which expresses a mood, feeling or thought in a reasonably concise form. W. H. Hudson has expressed his view: "This personal poetry is almost unlimited in range and variety, for it may touch nearly all aspects of experience, from those which are more narrowly individual to those which involve the broadest interests of our common humanity. Thus, we have the convivial or bacchanalian, B-A-C-C-H-A-N-A-L-I-A-N, lyric. The lyric which skims the lighter things of life, the lyric of love in all its phases and with all its attendant hopes and longings, joys and sorrows, the lyric of patriotism, the lyric of religious emotion and countless other kinds which it is unnecessary to attempt to tabulate. Even though critics have tried to define it." Number 2. Hegel says that the lyric should be intensely subjective and personal expression. Number 3. In the words of Wordsworth, it is the spontaneous overflow of the powerful feelings. Number 4. Drinkwater declares that the characteristic of the lyric is that it is the product of the pure poetic energy and that lyric and poetry are synonymous terms. Number 5. Gilbert Murray claims that a passage is lyrical simply because it possesses the quality of metrical construction or architecture. Contemporary critics hold that the musical essence is a vital characteristic of the lyric. Number 6. According to Lassus's Abercrombie, a poet does not compose in order to make of language delightful and exciting music. He composes a delightful and exciting music in language in order to make what he has to say particularly efficacious in our minds. R. P. Blackmore says, "Words build into their poetic meaning by building into sound, sound in composition, music." We see that every term in the definition is variable and we cannot look for precision. The concept and nature of the lyric vary from poet to poet, age to age, and culture to culture. It cannot be confined to a fixed formula or definition. It may be short of mere a few lines or extended to several pages. It may be personal as well as impersonal. It may be composed in traditional metrical structure or in verse libre. The lyric covers a large body of poetic writings, songs, odes, sonnets, elegies, dramatic monologues, and hymns, which are supposed to be the subclasses of the lyric. This term is also used very loosely in English poetic criticism. Thus, the lyric has drastically altered its earlier nature in the centuries of its development, and every variety of form and theme, mood and emotion is possible in it. On the ground of such a bewildering range and variety of lyric poetry, Princeton Encyclopedia of Poetry and Poetics divides it into three chief types. Number one, the lyric of vision or emblem. Number two, the lyric of thought or idea. Number three, the lyric of emotion or feeling. The lyric of vision. Ezra Pound has discussed such type of lyric as ideograms, and Apollinaire has calligrams. It is the most externalized kind of lyric. In this lyric, the poet follows the dictum, a poem should not be but be, and he presents a concrete, hard, definite, precise, and pictorial images evoking particular emotions rather than a direct subjective expression of it. The Elizabethan first used the visual lyric with the experiment of Gascoigne, G-A-S-C-O-I-G-N-E, and George Puttenham. In the 19th and the 20th centuries, under the Chinese and Japanese influence, the imagists and the symbolists revived the practice. The lyric of thought. The lyric of thought is objective in tone and method. It can be divided into two types. Number one, the expository or informative, and number two, the deductive or persuasive. Dryden, Cowper, and T.S. Eliot are formulators of a lyrically expositional verse. The preoccupation of the 19th and 20th century poets with sound and verse form has produced verse libri, which is an obvious effort to accompany poetic statement with musical techniques. The didactic lyric includes the allegorical, satirical, exhortatory, and vituperative species. It is often patriotic or moralistic. The vituperative lyric aims its effect everywhere, against critics, convention, war, poverty, and suffering, or against the world in general. Arnold, Tennyson, Donne, Pope, and Ezra Pound are the chief exponents of this type of lyric. The lyric of emotion. The lyric of emotion is the most subjective of internal strain of modern lyric poetry. It becomes synonymous with poetry through the criticism of the Romantic school, and which is the prototype of the personal. The lyric of emotion has three major groups. Number one, the sensual lyric. Number two, the imaginative lyric. And number three, the mystical lyric. The sensual lyric has been composed from the Renaissance to the 20th century. The love poetry of the Elizabethans and the metaphysicals, the erotica of the Restoration, the synthesthetic images of Keats and the Romantics, and the poetry of the Symbolists is the sensual lyric. The imaginative lyricists are Odin, MacNeice, Empson, and Spender. Finally, the mystical lyric is significant in modern lyric history. Foremost, the mystical lyricists are Herbert, Vaughan, Blake, Hopkins, Baudelaire, and Yeats. Characteristics of good lyric. Number 1. A lyric is musical in its sound pattern, which bases its meter and rhythm on the regular measure of the song. It employs cadence and consonants to create the tonal variation of a chant. Number 2. The essence of lyrical poetry is the reflection of the poet's personality, but a large number of great lyrics are typically human rather than personal or particular. Number 3. A good lyric embodies a worthy feeling and convincing sincerity of utterance. Its language and imagery must be characterized not only by beauty and vividness, but also by propriety and harmony. Number 4. A lyric generally deals with a single mood, feeling, or thought of the poet, marked by spontaneity. Number 5. A lyric should be emotional and short because it is composed in a state of inspiration and imagination. A poet cannot remain in such a mood for a long time. So, over-elaboration is certain to entail loss in effectiveness. Number 3. The structure of a lyric has three distinct parts corresponding to three moods of the poet. The first part is called motive, meaning the cause of the moment. This is stated in the first few lines. Then the poet expresses his thought, forming the bulk of the poem. And the last part is conclusion, in which he ends his thought with a sense of contentment or compromise or sadness. But it should be kept in view that all these essentials, brevity, metrical coherence, subjectivity, passion, sensuality, particularity of image, and structural unity are not ascribed to all lyrics strictly. The origin and metamorphosis of the lyric. It is the instinctive human tendency that tries to reveal emotional feelings through humming, crooning, and intoning. Thus, the lyric is one of the earliest forms of poetry. In ancient Greece, any poem written to the accompaniment of a musical instrument, lyre, was called the melic or lyric. It became a generic term for any poem composed to be sung. This was the meaning which is largely retained till the Renaissance. In the 16th century, the lyric underwent a change in the hands of the Elizabethans. They stopped composing their poems for musical presentation and instead wrote for a collection of readers. They followed the well-established method, inherited and employed specific themes, meters, attitude, images, and myths, but rejected the very foundation of lyricism, music. They began suiting their work to a visual rather than an auditory medium. The Elizabethan poets created verbal music by the excellent use of vowel and liquid consonants. At the time the lyric was undergoing this important change, the Elizabethan did not pay any attention to define it. Until the 17th century, critics failed to distinguish between the true melodic and the verbal lyric, and both the song poem and the print poem were called lyric. The 18th century was not a favorable climate for the lyric because the neoclassicists were more and more inclined towards tragic and epic genres. The poet of the Romantic school, Wordsworth, Shelley, Keats, Poe, etc., confused the lyric with poetry as they wrote poems with lyrical modes. The terminological confusion remains the same even in the 20th century, as the definitions of the modern critics prove. Thus, from the earliest form of the song, the lyric has been expanded, discussed, altered, and developed through the centuries until it has become one of the chief literary instruments which focuses and evaluates the human condition. In flexibility, variety, and polish, it is perhaps the most well-practiced of the poetic genres, G-E-N-R-E-S. Now, the lyric is the most extensive category of verse. This chapter is now over. Thank you.